If this music sounds kind of familiar, it's by the avant-garde composer Philip Glass. Such a recognizable, iconic sound. Philip Glass has composed operas, symphonies, film scores. It's kind of hard to exaggerate the influence he's had on modern classical music. And now, at age 78, he's composed something new, but it's not a piece of music. It's a memoir called Words Without Music. Here's Steve Paulson's conversation with Philip Glass.
In your memoir, going back to when you were a teenager, you say you often wondered, where does music come from?
Yes.
Have you ever come up with an answer?
Where it came from, I never found out where it came from. But I decided by the time I was in my 20s by then, about 10 or 15 years later, I've been asking the wrong question. The real question should have been, what is music? And that one, unfortunately, the answer to that question would be, well, music is a language. Unfortunately, with that answer, though it's accurate, there's not much juice in the answer. It doesn't tell you a lot. I was kind of unsatisfied with the status of the question and the answer for a while. And then years later, I was giving a talk, and I think it, actually in the last 4 or 5 years. So that by that time, I was in my 70s, so a good 40 years later. And someone said to me something like, oh, what is music? And I said, and now this is Steve, this is so interesting, without thinking, you know how that happens, you suddenly find yourself saying something and you start listening because it's really interesting. And I said, music is a place. And it's as real as Chicago or New Orleans. It's a place. And if you're a musician, part of you lives in that place. And I personally have 1 foot in that world and 1 foot in this world.
How did you come to that realization that music is a place?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But except for this, I was recently, there have been some revivals of Einstein on the beach in the last 4 or 5 years, and I was at one of those. And so I was hearing the piece in a way differently than I'd heard it before, because in the past I'd always played in the piece. This time I was watching the piece. And I came to the first part of the piece called The Train. And I was listening to The Train and said, that reminds me of something. It reminds me of music. Where did I get the idea for that piece? And I thought about it. And I was sure that the idea for the train music of Einstein on the Beach came from another piece of music. I couldn't remember what it was. And then I got it. It was a piece by Lenny Tristano, a jazz musician that you may know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do, yeah.
And it was a piece called Lineup. It was one of those pieces that he recorded with his left hand at a normal tempo and then speeded it up so that it's a very driving piece of music. And I was very grateful for that memory because I've never been a jazz improviser, but I never could find a place where the music of jazz actually was in my music. But when I sit down the piece of jazz, I said, there it is. That, I imported that into my own world and I turned it into The Train.
One of the things things that I find astonishing about your memoir is how you seem to be kind of voracious about sort of incorporating all of these different musical traditions. I mean, going back to when you were so young, I mean, the Western classical tradition to modern masters like Bartok and Schoenberg to experimental also, composers like John Cage. And
what about Ravi Shankar and the music from South India and the music from Africa? Mark Atkins, a didgeridoo player, or Wu Man from China? Or Fode Musosuso from Africa? It's really international. Especially international, because I found that my encounters with the non-Western music, the more non-Western it was, the more impact the encounters had on me.
Why was that?
Because it was so new to me. It was something I didn't know. When I was working with Mark Atkins, a didgeridoo player from Australia, and a wonderful player, I said to Mark, I asked him the same question that I asked myself. I said, Mark, where does the music come from? Isn't that nice? And this is what he said. He said, well, I think of this kangaroo. I'm out in the bush, and I see the kangaroo running across the field, and I bring the didgeridoo up to my lips, and that's the music I play. With Ravi Shankar, I was sitting with, I was a very young man, I was maybe 26, 27, I was sitting with him in his hotel room, and I said to him, Raviji, where does music come from? And this is what he did. He was sitting on his bed and, you know, cross-legged on the bed, I was sitting on the chair near the night table, and he turned to a picture, a photograph of an Indian man dressed in a kind of a Nehru kind of coat, you know. And he bowed to full prostration in front of the picture, and he said, thanks to the grace of my guru, the music has come from him into me.
Wow.
So that's it. Those are powerful questions. And
yeah.
I had the great good fortune of being with people like that.
Yeah.
I'd say most of my life.
You went off to Juilliard with the idea of learning to write music, and you have this great description of how you were either living in some apartment somewhere, and you wanted to kind of impose some disciplinary structure on what it would take to write music, and so you set a clock on a piano, and you'd sit at the piano for 3 hours from 10 in the morning until 1 with some music paper near you, basically waiting for inspiration to strike, I guess.
And it did not strike. However, what I started to do out of boredom of being alone, and I had made a commitment to that time. So out of boredom, I began to write music because I didn't know what else to do. So I tricked myself into becoming a composer. It was a trick I pulled on myself, and it worked.
Do you still do that? I mean, do you still sort of set aside a time? Okay, this is the time when I'm going to write music.
Well, it took me many, many years to get over that. I just say it took me a good 50 years until I got over that. And only in the last 10 years have I come to the point where I'm willing to write music any time of the day. In these early days, if I woke up at night and I heard had an idea for a piece of music, I would not write it down. I would only write music down that came to me during those hours. I had the idea that the muse had to be tamed. The muse was not welcome except during the times that I had imposed on the relationship, which would be 10 to 1. And for many, many years, I would set those times and I would not work outside of those times. There was a Pavlovian experiment that goes along with this, which was that after a while, at 10 o'clock, I began to think about music. it was a very, these are very simple mechanistic kinds of things. These are not profound strategies, but they worked. Later, when I was in my late 60s, early 70s, I finally began to say, you know, it's the middle of the night. Oh, let's just think, I'll go downstairs and write music anyway. And for the first time, I began to write music whenever I wanted to.
One of the things that was so surprising as I was reading your memoir was you didn't actually make a living as a full-time musician or composer until you were 41. I mean, you had all these jobs. You were you worked at Bethlehem Steel. Yeah, right. You worked as a plumber, as a cab driver in New York City.
See, that's how we do things in this country. Most of the people I know who are artists spent most of their adult lives hearing from their family, and when are you going to get a real job? You know, that's what we get asked.
And did you get asked that too?
Oh, sure. Until I reached the point where it began to occur to some people in my family that I was actually making a better living than they were. And that was a big, big, big surprise. They never thought that would happen. And nor did I think it would happen, by the way. It was a surprise to me as well. But you have to remember the kind of idealism that will lead a young woman or young man to devote a life to the arts with no promise or even hope of a material success. I saw it then, and I'm seeing it now. That kind of idealism is powerful.
So, what were the skills that you had to learn to be able to write good music?
That's a very good question. And I'm still working at it today. because the skills are, you don't come to the end of that. To come to the end of learning is to come to the end of living, isn't it? I mean, you don't want to come to the end of that.
Avant-garde composer Philip Glass. At age 78, he's still performing, writing, and composing music. Steve Paulson talked with him.